Welcome to the last program in our series on singleness with Reverend Tim Herbert. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, nice to be back with you, Karen.
So far, our journey has indeed been interesting, encouraging, and revealing, I'd say. So thank you very much for this, Tim. But there's one area that we have not touched. Well, you might have guessed by now what this program will be about: sexuality and singleness, and how to find strategies to live a fulfilled life. I know, Tim, you have had this question asked many times before, but I will ask it again. How can you be single and yet live a fulfilled life, also sexually?
Absolutely. It's a very big question that you're right, that people do ask a lot. And in the culture in which we are immersed, sex is a very, very big thing. It screams at us on televisions and from notice boards and magazines, and it is very much part of our culture. And it's been rightly observed that even the secular world around us doesn't matter whether we're single or married. They're not concerned, but they are concerned if you are not in an active sexual relationship, because that is expected to be the norm for everybody. So those of us for whom that is not an option often struggle, because we are tempted to feel that we are unfulfilled and that we have challenges in that particular area. I like to take the sting out of that particular challenge by looking at the original assumption that we are sexual beings and exposing it as a lie, because we're not sexual beings. We're relational beings. Just like God is a relational God, if you think God's essence, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in the Trinity is relational, He created us in God's image to be relational as well, which was why Adam was struggling on his own in the garden, because he couldn't be relational. Now, I like to illustrate this with one of those counters that was made for playing the game Trivial Pursuit. I don't know if you know Trivial Pursuit. You get this little plastic holder which has six different little compartments in which you put the token that you win for getting a question right. And I think our relationality is rather like one of those, in that there are different ways in which we can relate to each other. We can relate to each other spiritually, on a spiritual level. We can relate physically in a non-sexual way, simply by contacting, shaking hands, hugging. We can relate to one another intellectually, emotionally, socially, and sexually. That takes an awful lot of pressure out of the whole sexual thing, because it's put it into a perspective where it is one of the tools in my box, if you like, for relating to other human beings. I don't have to use that particular tool if I don't want to. I can relate to people using the other five, or four of the other five, or two of the other five. And for the time being, at this stage in my life, I don't use the one that's marked sex.
You're saying sexuality is part of that trivial pursuit of the whole thing, but it is the media that makes us believe that this is the main part and the only part.
It's certainly done that. And if you look at advertising and how much they're using sex, whether it's selling cars or ice cream or clothes, there is a whole marketing hype about us becoming attractive enough to have sex by using their products. And I think they've distorted true relationship and true respect by concentrating on that. And the impact of that in our minds is, because we are exposed to that lie over and over again, that we can start to buy into it. Now, I'm not saying that sex is unimportant. It's a very important part of relating to one another in a very specific context between married people. For Christians who are single, that is not an option. But it still means we've got plenty of other ways to relate to people, even if we're not using that one. So we don't need to feel frustrated as if we are sexual beings and we can't have sex, and therefore we have somehow undermined our validity as human beings. We have plenty of other ways for relating to people.
Yeah, and see, when I listen to you, the way we deal with lies is we realize, first of all, that this is a lie. So when this lie comes my way, I block it and replace it with the truth.
I think you're right. And we do need to be disciplined, because sometimes the movies we watch, the places we go, the music we listen to are all part of that subtle agenda that communicates you need to have sex. And actually, if we're going to be genuinely making a stand for Jesus, that's one of the areas in which we can choose not to compromise.
Yeah, and what lies do usually is they come and make things very big, and then you're almost kind of buried underneath. So when I can expose this lie and say, this is one area, but I'm a relational being, that's what I truly need, relational.
Yeah, that then puts sex back into its perspective, opposed to being the 100% issue out there. So it gets it into perspective. There are other things that we can do that can help us find other ways of being fulfilled without having sex. So, for example, exploring our sensuality, not our sexuality, our sensuality. How do we live rightly in the use of our senses? I first became aware of this when I realized that color was a very important part of me feeling comfortable in any given room. And I redecorated my home in colours that I enjoyed. And it really helped me to feel a lot more relaxed and a lot more positive. So there are all sorts of ways which we can explore our sensuality through the use of colour, texture and design, through the use of engagement with the outdoors, perhaps, such as walking, climbing, swimming, through sport, because sport is all part of validating our physical existence, through teamwork, through music. There are all sorts of things that we can engage with, sometimes as hobbies, sometimes as part of our lifestyles, that will help us feel more sensually fulfilled. How we dress, for example, does it make us feel good about ourselves? It's not necessarily about do we want to attract somebody else, but actually, are we expressing our masculinity or our femininity in the way that we dress, in a positive way, and doing things that make us feel fulfilled? I often say to women, when was the last time you really felt like you were a woman? What validated your femininity? And can you do that in a positive way to feel good? So I, for example, find that when I get to the top of a mountain, or when I ski down that mountain extremely fast, those are things that make me think, wow, that was validating, that was fulfilling. I really feel like a man. And those are the times when we don't need to think, I need to feel like a man, I need to feel like a woman, therefore I've got to go and have sex. Because we often look to the act of sex for that validation of our masculinity or our femininity, when there are plenty of other legitimate ways of finding that validation and fulfillment.
I have a grin on my face. I mean, this is radio, so you cannot see it, but you probably can hear it, because I was inspired personally by all the women that tried to live their sensuality. And you can tell if you see a woman who is just floating in her femininity and enjoying and not waiting for someone to see her, but just starting to explore who she is and what really makes her feel good about herself, and just enjoy being a woman with or without a partner. So I made this my aim to become one myself.
And absolutely. That's a brilliant aim. And it's really important to remind the ladies out there who are listening that Eve was fully and completely feminine as created by God before she met Adam. She did not need Adam to make her feminine.
Yes. And I think it's the right basis for anything that comes later on, because a man will not be more a man if he has a woman, and a woman will not be more a woman if she has a husband.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to us being a relational being. So loneliness is a very big issue amongst singles, just to have someone you can share your life with, or even just coming home from work, just, you know, someone who knows how you're doing, how your day has been, and you can share that with.
You're right. Loneliness is one of the biggest challenges that we face. And it's brought into sharp resolution at times when we go home to an empty house. Often Sunday lunchtime is a very disappointing time after we've had the fun of being at church and the noise and the laughter. And then we go home by ourselves to eat a ham sandwich while others go home to have a nice meal. That can be a challenge for us. We need to find strategies of ensuring that we've got positive relationships that will help avoid us fixating on that one special guy, that one special woman who is going to meet those needs. Because I know enough married people who come home from work to get shouted at as soon as they're through the front door, and they don't get a kiss and a, "How was your day, dear?" They're already into confrontation and argument. I think the point that I'm making is that it's important for us to find ways of meeting those needs for belonging and intimacy in a community rather than looking for that one special person, because we often believe that that one special person is going to meet all our needs. And I know plenty of married people for whom that one special person hasn't met all those needs, and they still need community and belonging outside of their marital relationship. So in practical terms, Sunday lunchtime, which I've just spoken about, is a very good opportunity for a group of single people to go out for lunch together. And that then creates a positive out of a situation that was potentially a negative. We also perhaps need to think about, well, if going home after work to an empty house and not having anybody to debrief with or offload onto is a problem, is there somebody that I can meet regularly for coffee after work? And we can both go, "How was your day?" So it can be very easy for us to find simple solutions to some of those loneliness issues. I appreciate for many Wishing workers, they may actually be the only single person in their team or in their community, and they're going to have to work a little harder to find those people. But sometimes that can be done through social media. So, for example, I and another male friend who is also unmarried, we text each other once a day just to check how we're doing and to make sure everything's okay and we know what to pray for one another. It's a way of creating community. Other things that we do is getting involved in committed relationships with other families, other singles, where we actually help them out, sow into their lives, allow them to sow into our lives. And that sense of intimacy that comes through belonging to a wider community can also undermine that perceived need for sex, which we can't fulfill.
When I listen to you, it feels as if you had once in your life realized how important relationship is to you and then decided and actively engaged in building a network of relationships. Is that right?
You're absolutely right. I realized that with both my parents dead and one sister living quite far away, I was potentially very vulnerable and isolated. And people would often ask me and say, "Oh, do you have family?" "No, I haven't got any family." And I realized what a negative attitude that was. And I chose to foster those relationships. When people invited me to go to stay with them for Christmas, I didn't say, "Oh no, I don't think I want to go." I go, "Yes, this is a wonderful opportunity to allow somebody to support and encourage me." And I've done that with a broad group of people, single and married, adult and children, old and young, who comprise probably about 15 or 20 people that I think of as my family. And so when people say to me now, "Have you got family?" I say, "Yeah, I've got a great family. They might not be what you think of as family, but they are what I think of as family."
See, my personal experience in that particular area was that I always wanted to build those relationships. But as soon as someone is in a relationship or married or has their own family, they are so occupied with their own lives that there's no space for me. So I got personally often rejected in that area. What was your experience?
Yes, you're right. That can be very hurtful when you suddenly realize that somebody you thought was your best friend isn't any longer your best friend because their life choices have taken them in a slightly different direction and you've grown further apart. In some cases, I've just chosen to recognize that that relationship is dwindling and not to do anything about it. In other cases, I've actually engaged much more positively and I've fought for the relationship and I've got to know my friend's partner better so that I can be friends with both of them so that they don't have to choose. And those relationships are now the sort of people who do invite me to spend Christmas with them, who do invite me to go on holiday with them because they think of me as part of their family. And they think of a birthday celebration that doesn't have me there as not being quite full, not quite complete. And that is hugely validating and affirming to me. But you're right, it takes a lot of emotional work to be able to break through to those depths of relationship. And some of us, we don't necessarily have those people immediately handy. It's much harder to do those sort of works through social media or when we're back in the UK or wherever on home assignment. And we've only got a short amount of time. And so many mission workers really, really do feel vulnerable. And I've seen some of them actually in the mission field because we've constantly got this coming and going that you build a relationship with somebody and they're really important and supportive to you. And then they move on. Mm-hmm. And you have that bereavement thing going on and you're disorientated for a year or two till you can build a new relationship that supports you. And then they go. And this is hugely emotionally draining. Some people just get fed up with that and withdraw and don't engage with new people because it's too emotionally demanding. But I would encourage anyone who's feeling that to keep sowing, because now that we have much more ease of travel and social media are much more readily available to us, even though those people are not physically in our vicinity, they are still available to us.
Yeah, and I have a colleague, he was really struggling with finding a close friend on the mission field for almost 2 years. And we have all been praying because this friendship is something you cannot make and produce. It's just a gift. And he found one. And it was just wonderful to see, even if it may take time, a lot of effort and some setbacks, there is someone you can relate to. Just don't give up.
Yeah, that's great advice.
For more great advice from Tim Herbert, visit his website syzygy.org.uk. Syzygy is spelled S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. On this site, you will find his blog on singleness. You can read about the book he co-authored titled Single Mission and find other really valuable information for people serving in Christian missions.
This feature is a presentation of Member Care Media. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We invite you to check out our website further. We offer audio features and resources to help you in your work and daily life. In addition, we have links to other helpful websites that will be an encouragement to you and your family. This is a copyright production of Member Care Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.